Indianapolis Prince. Target. Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan's from Duluth. But I think probably if you lived in Minneapolis, you'd heard of Bob Dylan. Hip hop. Atmosphere. Rhyme Sayers. Atmosphere is known for their. Slug's a rapper in the rap group Atmosphere. Hip hop group Atmosphere. He's known for his live shows and his introspective lyricism, which also uses irreverent humor with an understanding of the entirety of hip-hop culture over Ant's boom-bap production with a penchant for minimalist ballads. I don't know if any hip-hop producer ever wanted to say it. Rhyme Sayers is a label from Minneapolis, which Atmosphere is part of ownership of. Minneapolis, George Floyd was murdered.
Kofi Annan in the pool.
West,
famous.
West.
Wanna scream my name.
Karis, one sec. But wait. Stop. My voice is loud.
B-S-A.
Karis, one sec. This thing we do right here is a mix of knowledge and movement. If you got knowledge, that means you hit. If you got movement, that means you get hot. If you mix the knowledge and the movement, that means you hit.
Origin of the word hip hop. First, you have to be hip.
From city to city to coast to coast.
Oh, I showered for this.
You look really good. You're like, you know.
I took a shower. I'm using the video. There we go.
Oh, look at you. Look at you. Hair is clean. You shaved.
I did. How've you been?
I'm chilling. And yourself?
I've been better.
Are you in Minneapolis right now?
I am.
We all saw the news. The shooting of Rene Good by ICE. Can you describe this? Can you tell us what it's like in Minneapolis right now?
I haven't left my house.
You haven't left your house?
Mm-mm. I'm watching it on my phone just like everybody else.
Okay.
I don't even know how to begin to process this, and so I'm kind of lost because I leave town in like 6 days, and I don't want to leave because I have a family here. You know, Rene Good is not that different from my own partner, and we have 3 children, and. You know, life is full of bad ones. We could all catch one. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's plenty of misfortune out there for us to step in. But, you know, adults are in charge and they're acting like children. And that's how it can go wrong. I'm sorry for cursing. I'm not sure if that's a thing.
I can edit if it's a problem. Don't know. Talk, please speak.
You know, I can't help but want to control my environment and control my surroundings and control the things around me to make sure that everybody around me is safe, and learning how to submit to the fact that you can't is still a struggle that I deal with. This is still one of my larger internal obstacles. And so I'm still feeling selfish right now. I'm still obviously, you know, I'm sad. I have empathy. I have feelings. I'm human. And so I feel a way about what went down, but it's like my animal brain is kicking in, my survival brain is kicking in, and I'm trying to figure out how am I going to keep my wife and my kids safe in this future that these adults are ruining. So I don't know. I think there should be a, you know how they talk about term limits? There should be like a limit to life. Like none of us should have made it past 50. Like I'm pretty sure that's how it used to be. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm pretty sure humans didn't live that long, right? And look at how uncomplicated that must have been. So I don't know, we need to get out of the way and give it to these kids. I'm over 50 and I'm saying this.
Well, you're a leader, you have wisdom. And I know what you're saying, you have a basic idea of like, if people are getting killed, the first idea is to get out of harm's way, regardless. Protect yourself, self-preservation. So I'm sorry for, I know what you're saying is like, you're inside your home because things are outside or you know, people are getting killed. So I'm sorry to, okay, so George Floyd was also in Minneapolis.
Yep. Just down the street.
From where you are and from where, yeah.
From where I'm sitting right now, down the street. You know, the Renee Good murder was a little bit further away because it's a little west of here and north, whereas George Floyd was literally north, right up this street, about a mile. And then if you cut over, you know, half mile to the west, you get, I guess what they have always called South Central Minneapolis, but we were always afraid to call it that because South Central Los Angeles was such a huge thing that we didn't want to sound like we were trying to call our South Central like there. So it's just South Minneapolis. But South Central Minneapolis is where Portland Avenue is. Chicago is just a few blocks off of that. That's where George Floyd was murdered. So these two events happened fairly close to each other, walking distance. And the city's still reeling. They're still reeling from George Floyd. This, you know, it's like, it's still boarded up from the uprising that occurred after that. And then you got, you know, some lunatic who assassinated a couple of state legislators, you know, not even a year ago. You know, this place is hot, man. And so it's easy to want to stay in the basement. It's easy to want to just avoid it and just be an island. And, you know, if I get the call, if somebody needs assistance, if somebody needs something from me, I'm here. But I don't even want to be a part of the world anymore, man. This place is, it's unfortunate that this is how we started this conversation because I don't want to, you know, I know that my main goal is to spread optimism, positivity, hope, whatever. That's what I've been trying to do for a long time. So it's just, again, it's just whack to have to be confronted and to figure out how to navigate when you yourself cannot feel what you're trying to project.
Well, I apologize. Well, I somewhat apologize for starting a conversation like this.
No, it's okay. It's not your fault. Neither of us created this situation, and it's got to get talked about. It's just unfortunate that this is the first song on our album today right now with you and me. It's this song, right? So we got to figure out where we're going to go from here.
Okay, well, there's this common thing, or I'll say common, there's this idea where some people are political and some people are cultural. And cultural is where you don't necessarily yell at a leader, but you spread positivity, or you spread something that will affect things from your own energy. Would you consider yourself like a cultural person or a political person?
I guess it depends on the algorithm that day. You know, it's like I'm political when I'm forced to think about or juxtapose with those thoughts and ideas, which feels daily. And I probably lean more cultural naturally, just from how I was raised or whatever. You know, my parents were not overtly political. I didn't hear them talking about politics in my house. The closest Ronald Reagan, I heard that, but it wasn't like a. It was young people talking, you know what I'm saying? And so so that's, you know, hip hop actually really is where the majority of my political personality grew out of. You know, I learned more from Chuck D and KRS-One and the different rappers from the 80s and early 90s, Ice Cube. You know, I learned more from listening to these men express their feelings than I learned from my immediate surroundings as far as politics. You know, culturally, you know, my parents were spread love people, you know what I'm saying? But they were also, you know, work at double shift people, and they were also get a little culturally. That's probably why I am where I am. That's why I make music. That's why I that's probably what my voice sounds like, you know.
We have to wake up every day regardless what everyone else is doing and make something of your life regardless. That said, I'm going to ask one more question and I'm going to take it away from this, because I understand there isn't an answer. We don't have an answer for this. I have this fear of like ICE agitating a situation where things aren't perfect as it is, you know? Like, you already have a situation where people aren't perfect. Is there anything, like, you would say, just the idea that someone was killed and there's also pre-existing conditions like police brutality and economic issues to avoid, like you're saying, you're staying inside, to make sure people in Minneapolis and other cities, is there any advice or just hope you'd have, anything you could say?
I think they want me to stay inside. They want all of us to stay inside. And unfortunately, I've already showed and proved that I will bend and stay inside. Now, here's the thing though. It's like, I don't think I'm inside because I'm scared or anything other than I'm leaving in a week.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm trying to get it in with my family as much as I can right now, specifically, especially after the event that took place, you know?
And dad, so, your wife needs her husband.
Well, but also just because I want this time. Yeah. I want this time with them. And again, that goes back into my, like, you know, selfish brain where it's like, well, okay, if I'm going to be gone without the ability to really control the environment or to take part in helping the environment back home, then I just want to have some real quiet, intimate space with my family before I gotta take off. Because once I'm out there, I'm out there. You know what I'm saying? It's like I have to juxtapose with people. I have to move around. I have to talk to people. And that's where I'm gonna focus on putting my, you know, it's not this community necessarily, but it's people. And this could have happened in any community. Let's keep it real. You know what I'm saying? Like, it happened here, again, and it is what it is. These people here are gonna persevere, you know what I'm saying? Like, these are strong people. This is a strong community. But since I gotta be out for 6 weeks, then I'm just trying to spend as much time with the kids and the wife as I can. The dog, I got a dog now, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like I gotta, so I'm just trying to soak it up. And talk about it with my kids. Like, that's kind of been where my focus has been with this, is to, you know, talk to my kids about this stuff. It's, you know, specifically the older kids. But the younger ones obviously in on it too, because, you know.
So I'm sorry, what did you tell your kids?
Well, I didn't have to tell them anything. We just have to talk about it. You know, I want to know what they're thinking. I want to be able to respond to them genuinely and authentically, without, you know, I try not to spill too far into my conspiracy theories when I'm talking to the kids.
I see.
You know, some of the things that I guard about who I am, I keep quiet inside the house. I'm louder outside the house, if that makes any sense. You know what I'm saying? But in regards to, I try to, you know, I try to be as direct and also, but just try to see what they're thinking, what their friends are talking about, you know, how these kids are dealing with it. So I could just kind of help maybe throw some detail on the illustration. But it's like, ultimately, just like you or me, the way that we saw the world as kids is the way that we saw the world as kids, you know, and the adults could never come and force their vision upon us. And so if I could just learn what they're seeing and just kind of help mold it, you know. So essentially, you know, it's a family that is not supportive of this type of federal agency doing what they're doing. And my family all sees that because they see it through the lens of, they have friends who have accents, you feel me?
Mm-hmm.
They have friends from other places, and these are their people, these are their friends. And you can't, there's no borders, there's no political affiliations, we're playing soccer, B. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, this. And so that's a good, pure place to start with this conversation. So that's where, you know, this conversation has been and what it has been, you know, for the last year, just in regards to the concept of ICE and what they're here to do and what we're told their goal is versus what the actions really are, you know, et cetera. You know, it's like, just try to keep things real and see if we could keep the video from replaying 1,000 times on a screen in front of them, you know?
I understand. It's traumatic. People need to understand things at the same time. You don't want to, I respect what you're saying, sir. It's kind of like, I appreciate what you said about, like, just listening to KRS-One. Like you're saying, a kid makes up his own opinion, but if you hear some wisdom from KRS-One, you learn something, and then that applies to a decision when you're outside, if you have to deal with a situation or things of that nature. So basically, you want to prepare your kids enough where they can make decisions if they're anywhere near anything.
You know, I hope that there's, you know, everybody takes a situation like this and they apply it to their, whatever their lens is. And right now there's so much emphasis on a political lens. Like I said, my parents weren't very political. A lot of people weren't. It's just like, even I remember a time in my own young adult life where people just weren't that involved. And right now there are so many people involved and so many people have opinions on everything and so many lines being drawn and so much just super hard division. And people being like, well, I have to pick one team. It's either A or B. And I feel like that's a problem within itself. But when a situation, a tragedy like this occurs, the fact that one team has empathy for the victim and one team has empathy for the agent, that really concerns me, because I feel like anybody could have empathy for a victim. I feel like anybody could have empathy for what's been happening in Palestine. I feel like, what is happening, man? I don't remember this. I don't remember this as a kid. I don't remember this until probably post 9/11, right?
Yeah.
Where suddenly people started just picking one lens to put on top with how they saw world events. And I don't know. It feels really fake or something.
Yes,
this feels synthetic. This doesn't feel like real to me, you know?
I agree with you. There's power struggles and you're like, Bob, okay, yeah, I understand what you're saying. That's why
I hope that her kids are really at the forefront of where this goes, starting now, because nobody's talking about those children other than to say she had three children. I ain't heard nobody, you know, nobody's like, I haven't seen no GoFundMes. I'm because at the end of the day, fuck what side you're on. Like, this woman died who, whether or not you think, whatever you could figure out how to get yourself to believe aside, this mom, obvious mom in a fucking minivan, was killed. And she's not the first one. The last 10 years, there's been many. And when are we gonna think about those kids? When are we gonna, you know, I don't know, man. I don't got no answers. I don't got no, all I got is reaction, just like anybody, man. I don't know how to fix this. I don't know what to, I don't even know what to think of it. I don't even know how to process this. I could tell you how I would feel if I was 22 and you know, unleashed and unhinged. But at this age with children and having to think about what I'm leaving for my kids, what I'm leaving for your kids, like I don't even know how to process this anymore. I guess that's part of getting old.
I think people should. I think you've kind of nailed it without nailing it. You have to think about the future. People should think about the future. That's it. We have to live in this. We have to live in all this stuff. And you were discussing hip hop. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you because you're.
No, it's all good. I have outbursts.
But this is why I was like, I'm talking to Sluggies in Minneapolis. I want to hear what this man has to say. So you're about to tour. You're about to leave. You just finished touring with like Cypress Hill, Farside, and Lupe Fiasco.
Yeah, man, great tour, good times.
And you're hip hop. You're a smart dude. You understand things, but that's not the way I should have worded that. You're hip hop dude. So touring with Cypress Hill, Lupe Fiasco, Farside. What was that like for you?
Oh man, it checked a lot of boxes for me, man. Straight up, like there's not. Like everybody has their personal favorites, your top fives, your top tens, etc. But as a, I consider myself a low key a historian on this, right?
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in New York. I wasn't around the Bronx in 1974, 1980. I didn't get to New York until like 1999. But I've studied this from afar. And I have applied myself to this in a way. I have given it my resources from my time and my effort, my energy, my money. I have put everything that I've had into studying this music, man. And this checked boxes, right? Cypress Hill is an influence on atmosphere. You know, it's interesting because unless you really have been paying attention to us for a long time, you might not even recognize that. But if you really listen to the way that Anthony would create these dark soundscapes for me to rap on, that is what built us. That's what actually made me have to, balance it with the piano joints. You feel me? Like it was like there, we had a lot of dark stuff. And so to balance that, I would always try to pull one of his piano beats out of him so I could do something that was like, can we lighten the mood a little bit on this record, just somewhere, on the album, right? So weirdly, Cypress Hill and Mobb Deep were very influential on us, I believe. Lupe, regardless of who you are or who your tops are, Lupe is one of the best lyricists of all time.
Yeah.
And Farside, come on, man, like they kicked down doors for me to have a voice that could be accepted by somebody. You feel me? So that was an amazing tour for me.
I saw you guys, and it was dope to watch the whole thing. It was like just as a hip hop head, it was like one of those like, I'm watching this, I'm seeing this. Your label, you have MF Doom on your label, right? And your single right now is with Curious.
The last single, the Kilowatts joint, that's with Curious.
Did you meet Curious through Doom or?
Oh, that connection was definitely made because of Doom. I mean, of course, I have all the singles and the vinyl he put out with Walk Like a Duck on it, spell it with the J, not with that, all that. And so I was a fan. I remember when I first heard him rapping with Zev Lovex on the KMD record, the one that got shelved. I had one of the bootlegs. I don't know if any DJs remember, but when that got shelved and we couldn't get the vinyl nowhere, that was one of the first real like moments where I felt like I gotta buy that bootleg because that's the only way I'm gonna get that record,
And then Bobbito dropped.
But there
right?
was a couple 12. He dropped it way later.
Yeah.
Like that was years later when he dropped it. But we'll say years, like maybe 2 years or so, three. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head. But we got that probably 94 was when I got the bootleg of it. Of the one that Elektra didn't put out. But yeah, I was happy when Bobbito issued that. But that, so I'm a fan of Curious. This was the first time I'd ever had the opportunity to get down with him. And that makes me happy. Yeah, this, like I seen him once, but didn't talk to him. It was way back in the day. I think it was at a show. maybe at SOBs or somewhere. So it's funny. I could list you liner notes off of most of these records, but some of my own memories get blurred out.
You know a lot of people, sir. That was dope that you. Okay, so you dropped Curious's record last year, right?
Yeah. Don't point at me. You said you dropped it. Rhymesayers dropped
it. Rhymesayer, okay.
Yeah. I hesitate to be to have that projected upon me, because for so long people have made me the face of that. And the truth of the matter is it's a collection of really intelligent friends that came up together. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, and honestly, I don't feel like I deserve to be the face, because I spend probably the least amount of time at that office of anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't go to meetings. I don't even go to atmosphere meetings, bro. Like, I'm a very flaky artist type, you know? And so it's like, so Rhymesayers put out the Curious record. I voted yes. You know what I'm saying? I thought it was cool, but everybody, including Curious, knows that none of them have to give me props for none of that. I was just kind of on the sidelines smiling.
That's cool. I put the needle on it and I was smiling, so I appreciate you saying yes. And Rhymesayers, everyone involved, knowing that was a dope record to put out.
So good. That record was so dope.
So Rhymesayers also dropped Black Star. That was Dave Chappelle. That's from a Dave Chappelle podcast. What was the process of talking to Chappelle to acquire the rights to release that?
You know, I wasn't in those meetings. But what I do know is that, you know, Sadiq, who really does run the label, he's pretty much the guy that has the stress. And the guy, well, his name is Stress. Back when he made beats, we called him Stress, because he's the dude that carries the weight. You feel me? Like, yeah. he's friends with Yasin. He's friends with, you know, it's like, he's friends, you know. That's how Doom got connected to us. That's how Curious came in, via the connection with Doom. You know, Black Star and Madlib, and you know what I'm saying? Like, he's the real celebrity of all of us. Sadiq is. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause he's out there. He's friends with everybody. He you know, he's a very humble dude. He's easy to talk to, and I can see how and why he became the person he became with his personality and his articulation, even. You know what I'm saying? Like, so he's the reason that Black Star, that we put out the Black Star record.
Well, every time I look at the records, it says, we know you're involved, and it says Sadiq, and it says a name I respect. I look at the Rhymesayers logo, and then I also see the name Sadiq, and I respect both those things. And that's because you put out Rhymesayers records like that.
Well, you know, I get the executive production credit on a lot of that stuff. I think, well, you know, I've always been more of the artist liaison. So if an artist is looking for some answers or wants to vent, you know, I'm a safe place to go to, because I understand what you're going through.
Yeah.
You feel me? And so, which is why people have always kind of ended up making me kind of the face of the label, because you see me doing features, you see me out and about, you know what I mean? But it's like, I know it's okay for me to admit nowadays that I don't really do a lot of the work. You know what I'm saying? I did investing in it. You know what I'm saying? And I'm there for anything. Any of these people could call me, reach out to me. Like, I'm there. So I'm definitely a worker bee, but I don't see my part of it as work. Yeah, I'm just being friendly. I'm just your friend or your colleague or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I'm not the one going, this is how much we're going to spend on marketing or any of that kind of shit. You know, it's like, I don't care. I don't even go to the atmosphere marketing meetings.
And that's running a label is a full-time job, just like performing is, you know? Performing is a salary job, but it's more. So, last question about the label, then we'll move into the tour. What does Doom do for the continuity? Because Rhymesayers and Doom, or Doom and Rhymesayers, what does that do? What does MF Doom do for the continuity of hip-hop?
That's an interesting question. I think it's a good question. Let me just try to make sure I understand the question. What does Doom do for the continuity of hip hop? Okay, I'm gonna interpret that. What I think, like, I think the all right, so it's always interesting talking about somebody after they have transitioned and discuss what their work is or means, because it's going to continue to evolve and become something. You know, when you have an artist who is able to eventually fall off, then you're able to put a period on that. But when something like this occurs before an artist falls off, there's no period. It's like a dot, 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 because you don't really know what was coming. So it's all, so if we take that snapshot, I think, you know, especially with how influential he's become prior to and after his transitioning, I feel like it leaves the imprint of lyrics, focus on lyrics and the playfulness of playing with your words, you know, making me think. Even if it feels like aesthetically this is just fun and it's not a big deal, when you can start opening up the Easter eggs and seeing what's really inside there and inside of the wordplay, I think that him having as much influence as he has, and especially musically too, because honestly I could say the same exact thing about his music, the stuff he was producing, because when you start cracking it open and hearing it and looking at it, it's like on the surface it's playful, but really he's hiding vegetables inside of the cake. And I feel like that is a tradition in this music. There are a lot of artists who have done that, but it's something that isn't as prevalent as it used to be. And for Doom to have been doing that well into the 21st century, as well as in 20 years into the 21st century, I feel like that's important. That will remain impactful. I hear artists who it's my first time hearing you, and you're 24 years old, and this is like your second mixtape, and now I'm finally hearing you, and I can hear the Doom influence in there. And I'm like, I like this. I think this is dope. I like where this is going, you know?
Doom, the flow is, it hasn't stopped yet. Yeah, that's what you're saying. So Doom, before Doom, there was Cool Keith. You're touring Cool Keith.
I am touring with Cool Keith.
And that's a legend.
That is a legend. Yes.
So, Ultramagnetic or Dr. Octagon?
Me, Ultramagnetic. You know, Dr. Octagon was dope. But to me, the dopest part about Dr. Octagon was its existence. The fact that that happened at that time. I think that was like 1994 on a record called Bulk, before any of us were doing indie stuff. You know, we were all just getting started, basically. Yeah. And so for this legend to make a record with Q-Bert, who, you know, this was, for me, this was still pre-internet, right? So I had to hear of these things the hard way, the word of mouth. And so it meant more, because it couldn't just be somebody selling me an artist online. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like way before the internet for me. I didn't get online until the 2000s or maybe late 90s, regardless. So here's this record. And the dude at the record store is telling me, like, yo, this is Cool Keith. And I'm like, what? Give me it. Let me see. And he's with Q-Bert, who I'm like, oh, I've heard of him. He's supposed to be dope. In fact, you know what? He's from the Invisible Scratch Pickles, right there, making them VHS tapes. And then DJ Shadow, who had just popped off, had a little bit of input on there. You feel me? And then Dan the Automator. And that was amazing because of its existence. And the songs are great, don't get me wrong, but Ultramagnetic is amazing because it's a foundational moment in this. And I say that, you know, it's interesting because they get their props, but they don't get their props the way some of these other dudes do. And I feel like
they got their props from Del Sol.
I feel like that's but I just mean like today. Right? You should see Ultramagnetic playing these festivals. I see some of these artists that I love from back then playing these festivals here and there, you know what I'm saying? And you should see Sed G and Cool Keith up there doing that. Do Critical Beatdown from front to back, you know what I'm saying? And then as an encore, do Papa Large. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, there should be a thing to me. But you gotta remember, I'm 53, so I was like 17, maybe 16 when Critical Beatdown came out. And so...
So I'm sorry to interrupt you. I only have 2 minutes left.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize.
Nonetheless, Ultra Mag is my, that's my joint. To this day, that tape stays in my car.
That's dope. So what is your cultural relationship with MSK? Because Nas just shouted them out.
Wait, say this again?
Nas shout out MSK from that writer song on the new Nas album. What's your cultural?
That's dope. I know a couple of the writers, but I'm not affiliated with them as a crew. But I've definitely crossed paths with a handful of them, and some of them and me have gotten along really well, you know. And when we had Soundset going, sometimes somebody will come out from MSK and come out and write. You know what I'm saying? Like,
is that from Ewok?
Ewok specifically, I've known him for the longest, you know, way before he was even down with MSK. He was one of the dudes running this city. You know what I'm saying? Like,
HM?
He definitely. What's that?
HM?
HM, yep, HM. And even before that, you know what I'm saying? Like, anyway.
I'm a writer, so I have to ask a question.
Got you. Okay, yeah, that's what's up. Ewok, Much, you know, these dudes were, because here's the thing, man, graffiti writers, I stopped trying to be a writer a long time ago.